Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of the Scatter Chatter Podcast. I am your boy, Just Ray. Just want to let you know, check us out on the links, comment, share, like, and even I think in the right-hand corner, our producer was telling me in the right corner you can get reminders. Tonight, we're going to kind of get into it, but before we do, there's a very special guest. Dr. Malini Iyer. I'm going to do some t-shirt designs and wanted to dedicate some of the proceeds to causes in India to help with the COVID situation there. But that's not what we're talking about tonight. I'll get into the details as we go on about the show. But without further ado, Dr. Malini, or can I just call you Malini?
Yes, thank you, Just Ray, for having me on the show. You can call me Malini.
Malini, there you go.
Yeah, it's an Indian name, so we pronounce every single vowel in that name, and the emphasis is on the A. So, yeah, it's Malini.
Okay, so Vedic sciences, but tell people who you are, what you do, and then we'll get into the juicy bits of the show.
Okay. So I'm a scientist by training and profession. I work in the biological sciences and research industry, biotech. But I have like several, I must say, dimensions to my personality. Mm-hmm. I about a decade ago, got really deep into yoga, meditation, astrology, which also ties into astronomy and all the Vedic sciences, even Ayurveda. And it helped because I came to the U.S. 14 years ago to pursue higher mm-hmm. education. And mm-hmm. staying away from India, it helped me disconnect from, you know, the culture of the country, the day-to-day social structure. But then mm-hmm. reconnect to spiritual India, the spirituality. So okay. when we talk about Vedic sciences, they are the foundation of Indian spirituality or Indian spirit. And it's the longest running spiritual tradition on the planet that has been preserved and it has been continued. In spite of all the foreign invasions in India, right? And that okay. brings us to ponder, how did this survive and why did it even survive? And that okay. also begs the question, you know, what is it that is so pervasive through time, survived the test time, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I've studied it, being in a different country than my country of origin. And, of course, growing up, I had a lot of lingo and jargon around me, and people would talk, and I would, like, absorb vicariously, but never, like, consciously think about what I was absorbing. And over the years, I've been able to connect the dots. So when you asked me to do a show on yoga and how it ties into Vedic sciences, I was really excited because, we are going to connect astronomy, mathematics, philosophy, and spirituality all together in one show.
Oh,
and that's a lot.
Boy.
I can't help it.
So, you know, this is amazing because what you're about, what you're talking about sets the foundation for my guest for next Wednesday, who is like the number one top numerologist, like here in the States. And she does numbers, and like, she's like really good at what she does. And the reason why I'm doing the show with her is because numbers is everything. I believe it's like a universal language for everybody. So that's going to be next Wednesday, but we're talking about now. So I think so that's the tie-in for anybody who's listening. She's a doctor. She does biotech. So that's why I wanted to do a shirt, a couple shirt designs to give two causes in India for COVID. So whatever the proceeds that we make, we're going to donate a percentage of the shirt sales from our merch store. The merch store link is on our link tree and it's on the page. And we're going to donate, if we make, I think the goal was maybe like over 1,000. If we make over 1,000, I'll even go as low as like 250. If we do 250 sales, I'm going to donate a quarter of that to anything, any cause in COVID that's vetted. And I'll put proof on Instagram and our Twitter to show that we actually did it. Because I don't want to be that person that's just like, oh, we did it. And no one's like, well, what happened? No, I don't want to be that person. So without further ado. Okay, so Yuga, this is what happened. I was having a conversation with a friend of mine. They're very, they're into spiritual stuff. They like very deep things. They have a guru per se. And we were talking about how people were coming back from COVID and they were getting reacclimated with society, learning how to like socialize with one another and coming out of a dark time. And she referred to Kali, and maybe you'll help give light to that. And then she said, she's mentioning yoga. And I was like, what the hell is a yoga? She's like, basically it's like a cycle of, I don't know, life or how we live and how we go in and out of it. And it's like a big circle. And it's funny how I think someone else was mentioning also, there's all these coincidences I'm finding. Like, I think, I don't know if it was Joe Rogan or if it was like some MMA fighter or some martial artist was talking about how when you master circles, and even in art, when you master circles, it makes all everything more balanced. So I know it's kind of like a weird kind of like off tangent kind of thing, but Yuga, Kali, tell us the basics, how it works. Or do you want to start with the Vedic sciences and then we walk our way into Yugas and the cycles and who Kali is and what that's all about, the era of Kali and all that stuff?
Let's start with Yugas and then everything ties in together. So, like you said, yugas are time cycles. And yes, the word cycle is attached to it. But it is not just a qualitative or a quantitative time period. It is actually both. It is a quantitative time period, and you can track this by astronomy. And it's a qualitative time period wherein the quality of life and, you know, for mundane purposes, we can say life, but it's really the quality of the mind and the consciousness refines. So there are four yugas. There is Satyug, Tretayug, Dwaparyug, and Kaliyug, the yuga of Kali. Okay. Or Kali is what he was saying. Now, these yugas, the way they are codified is it's believed that our sun, the sun in our solar system as a star, is a binary star. There is another star or a concentrated gravitational pull in the space. Around which our sun revolves too. So are revolving around the sun. And the sun, with all these nine planets, is revolving around this second star. So it's in a binary system. And for our purposes, I'm just going to call it Tsar. At this point in time, because so much has been lost in history, it's not clear whether it's a star or a strong magnetic gravitational pull. But stars are that. They have a strong gravity, right? And that's how the planets evolve. So Sun, our Sun has the second binary star, and its trajectory around the star is an ellipse. It's not a perfect sphere. It's an ellipse. It's like an oval-shaped path that our Sun takes around the star. And the star doesn't sit directly in the center of that ellipse. It is slightly to the off to one side. So the closer our Sun and our entire solar system is to the star, the lighter the years are. The further away we are from the star, because, you know, there is an ellipse or the oval path, the further away we are from the star on the other side of the star, the darker the times get in our solar system, especially on our planet. And because we have conscious life on the planet, we can see a difference in the consciousness. The difference in the consciousness, whether it's lighter or whether it's darker, is what creates a difference in the quality of life. So,
this is like some deep shit. I mean, this is good. Okay, keep going.
So the Vedic system really focuses on the mind and the consciousness that takes form, right? Our body is the form, it's the physical form, but there is a spirit and a consciousness that this body belongs to. Some people call it soul, some people call it spirit, whatever it is. But this body is actually within a conscious energetic body. And the quality of this conscious energetic body is what is defining the quality of these yogas. So let's get to know what each yoga, what the quality of consciousness is. And I'm going to start using the word dharma. And dharma is also a very unique word to the Indian subcontinent. No other place or religion or philosophical thought process talks about dharma. And it's harder to explain the word dharma in English because English, I think, is in my opinion, and in, I think, several people's opinion, it's a poor language. So it doesn't have a lot of words that describe consciousness or higher wisdom.
Right.
So there are two. Right? So there are two ways.
Our language, the English language, I mean, I speak English, obviously. It has a limited way to express, like, feelings. Like, there's some words that are just, we can't even say to express, like, different expressions. Yeah, that aren't even English. It doesn't even work. Like, I've seen it happen. Like, when you go to, like, talking to people from Europe or there's been some other countries where I've talked to some people from other countries, and they're just saying, like, you don't even have a word for this. Like, it doesn't even make sense. If I even told you, it would blow your mind. So I totally understand where you're coming from. I understand your perspective when you're saying that. I do have a question. You're talking about karma. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about karma, you know how, like, people, and excuse my French, people are just like, oh, karma's a bitch, or dharma is the opposite of karma. Can you clarity to that before we continue?
So dharma and karma are not divorced from each other, and they're two separate things. So I've not defined dharma yet, but let's talk about karma very briefly in English. It's poorly translated as action. But karma is not action. It's the universe trying to balance the equation out. So people who are mathematicians and have done quadratic and polynomial equations, you know that the equation needs to balance itself out. So karma is not just physical action. It is everything within you. It's your thought processes, It's your feeling, your emotions, your intentions, your inclinations. All of that are a part of karma, which moves life forward. So things that move life or time forward on this planet is karma. Of course, people say good and bad karma. There is no good and bad karma. I'm going to burst that myth right here. We are all on this planet playing our roles. And as long as you're playing your roles, you are doing your karma for more or less. I don't have a better way to say it. But as long as you're playing your role, whether you're being a doctor or whether you're being a policeman or a janitor, as long as you're fulfilling your role without any reaction to that role in this lifetime, the reaction itself is also karma. But all that is karma. Everything is karma. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. Karma is what it is. It's not good or bad. Karma exists. It's just a concept. There's no negative or positive emotion or description of it. It just is.
Yeah.
That's what I'm getting.
Karma is the... Okay. Yeah, and that's correct. And karma is the movement of it all, right? Movement of everything.
Yeah.
All the chemical reactions and biological reactions and animate and inanimate things interacting. Karma is all of it.
Okay,
it
wait.
Becomes
have you
very
seen
personal.
Star Wars?
Yes,
Doctor,
I've
have
seen Star Wars.
You've seen Star Wars. Okay.
Yeah.
Karma is like the Force.
Yeah. Karma is like the Force. I wouldn't say that. I would equate the Force to the higher power. Karma
okay.
is how the Force act in the world. That's why that word action is attached to it. But the way the Force acts in the world, a way the higher power or universal power or God acts in this world,
mm-hmm.
that is karma.
The reason why I say it's the Force is because the Force is what it is. Now, whose hands it gets into and that person, what they do with it, that's something different. But the Force is everything, the tree, like Yoda says, the tree, it's the rock, it's everything.
Yeah, and that is correct, what Yoda says and what you're saying, but that's not karma.
Okay.
That is divine, that is consciousness, that is the one without the other, right? That Force is the one
okay.
without the other. It's the supreme
okay.
soul, or you can call it God, but it's the supreme soul or the one that doesn't have any duality. Unless there is
okay.
duality, karma is created. Because as soon as you incarnate on this planet, you, whether you sit in a cave or whether you're out in the world, you are a part of the karmic process, which
oh,
is
shit.
Movement
That's...
of life.
That's big.
So karma is specific to Earth. Earth is a karmic planet. And karma is what binds the mind, our mind and consciousness, to the space-time continuum. It ties that particular incarnation or that particular consciousness to the space-time continuum, if that makes
okay,
sense.
Okay, my mind is officially blown right now. Okay. okay. Okay,
yeah.
Let us continue.
So it's what is required to move this world forward. And that's why in India, the concept of birth and death and reincarnation is a big concept, because if you're not born, you won't get a chance to play out the karmas or work out your own individual consciousness and the energies associated with it. You won't have an opportunity to do that. So birth is important. So is death, because once you die, you create space for other people or other souls to work out their consciousness. And then you reincarnate so that whatever is left over from the previous birth is still working through that. So it's like a big chemical reaction that you're a part of. So, for example, when you're cooking and, you know, you boil water, you can think about the boiling of the water as one birth, and in that birth, the karma of that water was to be boiled. And then in other pan, you are sauteing the veggies. You can see that as a different lifetime or a life form or a different person, and they are, that karma is associated with sauteing the veggies. But at the end of the day, when you make the entire dish, the water is used to boil the vegetables and then, you know, saute the veggies in the oil and the onions, and it comes together and makes a complete dish. But all these different components come together. You know, it's, and that all that action and all that name, the heating up and the cooling down and going within the pot, all that is karma.
Wow.
Does that make sense?
That makes sense. So we're talking down to like the atomic mass and the frequency that everything that we perceive or emits, that's all karma.
Yes, that's all karma. And there's a memory associated with karma. So even atomic, even atoms and the vibrations have a certain memory associated with it, right? And that's why that atom is behaving like a helium versus a uranium. So there's a memory associated with it. And that memory associated with it is a part of its karma. And that's what is being worked out. That memory is being worked out in that karma, in that cycle.
Wow, this is a whole nother podcast that can get started about time, space, and consciousness. Oh, what have I done?
Yep. So that's karma in a nutshell. I don't want to confuse people a little bit more, but let's get to dharma.
Okay.
So dharma and karma are not divorced. You can use your karmas to move towards dharma. And dharma is a part of, it's not the only thing, it's a part of four purusharthas. So purush meaning the incarnated being or the incarnated consciousness, and arthas, purusharthas, artha meaning what gives meaning or life to that life or consciousness. So there are four purusharthas that are important for life on this planet. No one thing is more important than the other. Although we live in a very skewed world, and I'll explain what is more skewed than the other. The four purusharthas are dharma, which is what we are going to talk about in with relationship to yogas. Dharma, artha is all your values and possessions and things that you consider as wealth. It can be your family, your friends, your community, or literally wealth, resources, money. That's artha. The third purushartha is kama. Kama is our desires, what we seek, right? It can be greed, but also pleasure, desires, things that drive us in this life. And then the fourth one is moksha, which is liberation. You know, what liberates us or what connects us to the higher power. Dharma, the first purushartha, is one of those four pillars, right, that is important for human consciousness. And dharma literally, I mean, if I have to really break it down into a couple of words, is the truth without any illusion. It's the natural wisdom or the cosmic laws or the natural laws. But it's like truth without any illusions or maya. And that itself, we live in a world of an illusion. So dharma becomes like very hard to access right now.
Oh, man.
And, you know, in the world that we are in, and I was telling how we are skewed in that we are all living a life that is driven by kama, K-A-M-A, which is desires, that's the third purusharthas, and artha, A-R-T-H-A, which is we are driven by our desires, and the second thing is possessions. What do we possess? How do we get more of it? These two things out of the four pillars is right now in the world our focus. The focus, that's why, you know, at some point in the Indian philosophy, people started to pivot towards dharma and emphasize it a little bit more, because for yogas, people do not pursue dharma. They are very driven by kama and artha, my desires and my possessions. What do I have in life and what do I want? It is not about what I need. It's about what do I have and what do I want.
Oh, wow. Not about, oh, man, driven by their wants and not their needs.
Yeah.
Wow.
Driven by our desires. So dharma becomes a very important concept as we are right now in an ascension, and I explained to you that too. But in Satya Yuga, so the first quadrant of the, it's not even a quadrant, but yeah, the first phase of the yuga is when our solar system is closest to the binary star, to sun's binary star, and its consciousness is lighter and brighter. So in Satya Yuga, it's also called the golden age. They say you don't need words. You can to each other just with your thoughts. The spirits of the consciousness that are incarnated on Earth are very refined. They're connected to the divine. People have longer lifespans, running into close to 1,000 years. They live longer. And dharma, they say dharma itself has four legs. It's like a cow. Dharma, if you imagine a cow, and you call that cow dharma, it's standing on all four legs. So that's Satyuga. And the first time period when the solar system or our sun is the closest to this binary star. The next one, Treta Yuga, Treta means three, is when the cow or dharma is standing only on three legs and one of its legs is broken. So that means there is more corruption of the consciousness. There's darkness that has entered consciousness. People are still upholding laws of the land, but things like jealousy enter, things like wanting more than I need enter the consciousness, and wanting other people's stuff and other people's property or wives. That enters the consciousness, right? What I have is not enough. I want what the neighbor also has, basically. So that is Treta Yuga, where dharma is standing only on three legs. The next one, the third darkest phase, is called Dwapar Yuga. Dwapar meaning two. And in Dwapar, dharma is standing only on two legs. The cow is standing only on two legs, and it's really wobbly. It's also, and Dwapar Yuga is the age of technology, age of electricity. It's also the age where a lot of diseases come into the population. People do not uphold the laws of the land. There's a lot of illusion. But there's also a lot of advancement in technology for that kind of, called the Bronze Age. So Satya Yuga is called the Golden Age, Treta Yuga the Silver Age, Dwapar Yuga is called the Bronze Age. And then Kali Yuga, which is what started this whole podcast. Kali Yuga is supposed to be the darkest of all four time cycles, and it's where the solar system is the furthest away from its binary star. So it receives less light from this binary star, and consciousness is at its darkest. In Kali Yuga, dharma is standing only on one leg. This cow is standing only on one leg, and it is, there's rampant murders. People are power hungry. There is no trustworthiness. And these are all qualitative stuff that has been, described in various scriptures. But you can't trust anybody. People don't eat clean food. The environment is completely polluted. And, you know, people don't care about each other. They don't care about their neighbors at all. They're willing to actually cut open their neighbors if that is going to take them further. It's not just snatching what the neighbor has, but it's also cutting them open and killing them. So it's at the dark.
Jeez. Wow, that's very horrible.
And making other people your slaves. It's not just taking their stuff, but they're also making the other people your servants, basically. So those are the four yugas. And so we talked about dharma. And so the dharma is completely upheld in Satyuga. And so it's not even a thought or a process. People don't talk about dharma a lot in Satyuga. And the Vedas, the four Vedas that were composed, they were written down somewhere between Satyuga and Treta Yuga. But they were composed, and, you know, India has an oral tradition. They were passed down orally in Satyuga. And there are only Vedas are about like 1,000 verses. In these 1,000 verses, you will see dharma mentioned maybe 100 times. It was not even a thought process. So people would not even think about it. It was just natural for them to be dharmic. In Treta Yuga is when things started to be written down and the concept of dharma started to be introduced in the stories that were being told and in the society and how dharma needs to be upheld. And when we talk about in terms of society and we talk about dharma, what we are really talking about is how the person in power is helping the one that is weak in terms of society. When we talk about dharma in terms of individual or a person, we are talking about our individual truth, right? So, and we hear it now in the consciousness world or in the yogic world in the West, at least. We hear it where people say, oh, I'm in tune with my body, or I'm listening to my body, or I'm listening to how I'm feeling. That's actually being dharmic about yourself. That's swadharma or my own dharma, how I am in the world and how I present myself in the world. There is also, that's swadharma or my own personal dharma. And then the dharma associated with people, a couple of different forms. One is, how what I do in the world affects other people. So whether I'm creating something, whether I'm making a podcast like we are doing now, whether I am making a product or whether I'm having a child in the world, whether my creation that is coming, whether it's first coming from a place of pure heart and whether this is affecting, uplifting the world or bringing it down or taking it more into darkness. So that's dharma associated with other people. And then in a slightly higher form, dharma is also what connects us to the divine or the higher force. So my actions or my inactions in the world, how did they uplift the society as a whole, not just my community or my family or my inner friend circle, but like society as a whole, how does it uplift it, empower it, and help it connect to the higher consciousness? Basically taking away illusions, not creating illusions, but taking away illusions and bringing in more and more authenticity and truth. So that's dharma in the bigger sense. And so in Satyuga, we don't have to really talk about dharma, or it's not even a concept that you're constantly thinking about. It's like brushing teeth. It's very natural for people. They get up in the morning. They don't have to think about it, or they don't have to think about their way they're being in the world. In Treta Yuga, the consciousness is aligned in such a way that, and that's where one of the Indian epics, Ramayana, takes place, where it's dharmic to uphold the boundaries or the laws of the land. And the laws of the land is the laws of the kingdom. and the laws of marriage. So upholding laws is important. And by upholding these laws and principles and policies, in today's world, we can say the laws of the government, right? Upholding mm-hmm. these laws is upholding dharma, because that ensures that everybody has an opportunity to get to a higher state of consciousness. And it also creates an opportunity where there is not a big difference between the powerful and the weak. It gives everybody an equal opportunity. In Dwapar Yuga, you can throw out all the policies and the laws, because even those, the human mind is such that it will find loopholes, like people do when they pay taxes, right? They start to find loopholes in it. So the mind is such that it will start to find loopholes, because it's vibrating at a lower consciousness. And so even upholding laws doesn't make sense. So dharma needs to be upheld whether laws are being followed or not. That means the powerful need to help the weak, whether you can help, whether those laws of the land are maintained or not. So this is the Dwapar Yuga, is when Mahabharata, another Indian epic, takes place, where Krishna, one of the Indian, we call him a god, but he was a really refined, enlightened human being when he walked this planet in Dwapar Yuga. He made sure that dharma was upheld at all costs, no matter the karmic burden on him, because karma is that if you do something in the world, it will create a different reaction, and you have to bear the consequences of your karma, not in mm-hmm. a fatalistic way. But at the cost of burden, he went out of his way. If laws needed to be broken, broke those laws and upheld dharma, which is he was ready to help the weak and uplift them no matter what, you know. And you can see that even now, right? You can see that examples even in the way slavery was. Slavery was the law of the land. It was it was written into the policies. It was not illegal to have slaves. But in Dwapar Yuga, if that laws of the land don't make sense, it was okay to break those laws and uphold dharma, which is, you know, help the weaker section of the society to come up so that there is a balance maintained. In Kali Yuga, everything is thrown out of the door, and the difference between the powerful and the weak becomes so stark that it takes that, you know, there is no way to bridge it. And those are called the really dark times. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it all makes sense. So I've been looking at these charts, right? So I've been looking at the charts of everything that you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And based upon a conversation I was having with my friend, I'm wondering, like, are we ascending out of one? Because you're talking about DARPA, I think is the electronic age.
Mm-hmm.
So are we going? Are we going? And then you were talking about how there were diseases and things of that nature. So I'm wondering, are we going? Are we descending or are we ascending out of it? A lot of the stuff that you're talking about kind of resonates, because, like, you know, you're talking about people being more into themselves, people with mm-hmm. power, like helping people with that don't have power. So what?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Where would you kind of like gauge us at as we're kind of coming out of wherever we were at, like during this last like year or so?
Yeah. Okay. So this is where mathematics comes into play.
Okay.
So if you, the entire cycle for our solar system to make a complete revolution around this binary star, to complete that entire ellipsoidal circle around this binary star, takes 25,920 years.
Oh, that's nothing. I'm like 50,000. I can do that.
So I have the math written down. So I'm not going to make a mistake here because I worked it out right before the call. So
okay.
The entire cycle, I wanted to be thorough.
Yeah, do it. Go ahead.
So the entire cycle takes about 25,920 years. Half of it is 12,960 years. So half a cycle of Satyug is out of this 12,960 years is equates to 5,184. So Satyug is about 5,000 years. Treta Yuga is 3,888, so about 4,000 years, Treta Yuga.
Yeah.
Dwapar Yuga is about 2,500 years, so 2,592 years. Kali Yuga is 1,290, the shortest period of time. And so when Rama and Krishna were born, we were descending. When Krishna was born, we were descending. So we came down from Satyug to Treta Yug to Dwapar Yug and went into Kali Yug. And when Krishna was born in India, and there are historical records, one of his dharmas, one of his life forces was to slow down the descent or to slow down the pace at which darkness enters the consciousness, right? So to say, for lack of better words. So when Krishna died, his year is recorded and 3,102 BCE, and we are in 2021 right now. So we take 3,000, and the day he died, 3,102 BCE is the day Kali Yuga started. That's what has been recorded. So 3,100 years plus 2021 brings us to how much? 5,123 years.
Mm-hmm.
Kali Yuga, I said, was 1296, one half of it. If you double it, it will be 2592. So if you subtract 2592 from 5123, 5,123, you get 2531. Dwapar Yuga, like I said, was 2,592 years long, or years long. So we currently have 61 years. If this calculation fits, because there can be a plus minus few decades in it, this calculation fits. We have about 61 years to enter Treta Yuga, the second best time, which is 2082. So we are currently in Dwapar Yuga. We are finishing Dwapar Yuga. So we went from Satyug, Treta Yuga, Dwapar Yuga, Kali Yuga, then started to ascend from Kali Yuga, went into Dwapar Yuga. So we are currently in Dwapar Yuga, and then we'll ascend into Treta Yuga. So we are on the ascending side of the cycle.
Okay. Yeah, it makes sense.
And so, you know, when invaders came into India, especially the Britishers, they had a lot of interest in translating a lot of Indian scriptures and Indian texts. And, you know, so what Britishers did is they learned Indian languages while perpetuating English through India. Translated these Indian texts into English and then taught these translated texts back to the natives, to the Indians in India. And by then Indians had lost their roots or their, you know, touch with their own languages. So there has been a lot of corruption introduced into texts, either intentionally or unintentionally. In good faith, I would say unintentionally. So when you look up yogas online, you'll come upon this author called Jocelyn Godwin, who was a translator and he's a musician. And he's written the book Atlantis and the Cycles of Time. And he says, Kali Yuga lasts for about 4,320,000 years. How he got this calculation, I don't know.
Random?
But I've not read the Atlantis and the Cycles of Time, so I'm not going to comment on it. But I can say from where the number 25,920 came from, which is the time that is required by our solar system to make a complete circle around this binary star. And it came, this number, 25,920 years, to go through all yugas, ascending and descending. We can see it right now in the precession of the equinoxes. So precession is P-R-E-C-E-S-S-I-O-N for those who want to look it up. And it's a concept where, it's not a concept, it's an astronomical phenomenon where the Earth, you know, the Earth is rotating on its axis. It's like a top that is rotating on its axis. And it wobbles, like the axis itself is moving. If people here who have seen a top, Indians play a lot with tops. So when you see a top rotating on its axis, the top axis keeps revolving around the smaller imaginary circle. And so the precession is this axis revolving around this imaginary outer, you know, center of gravity, I should say. I'm not a physicist, so please don't kill me for it.
That's okay.
And so the precession of equinoxes, which means, and we call it equinoxes because, you know, the equinoxes, which is the equal day and equal time, shift a little bit. That's how we are measuring it right now. Because of this wobble and Earth rotation around its axis. And that shift is about, the precession of the equinoxes is 1 degree. It processes or moves about 1 degree every 72 years. 71.6 to be exact. So it's slow enough that we don't notice it. And, you know, most people these days, or at least 30 years ago, a lot of people would not live up to 72 years, right? Now people do because science has advanced. So it's just a degree every 72 years. And if you think about a source, so, and you can see this also in the constellation and the zodiac. The zodiac is made of these constellations. So you can see the constellation shift. And that's a circle. That's a ecliptic, right? It's a circle. It's a plane on which the Earth rotates or revolves around the sun, the plane around which the Earth revolves around the sun. So if you multiply 72 by 360 degrees, 360 degrees is the entire degrees of a circle, right? You get 25,920 years. So as the Earth and the solar system is moving through space around this binary star, going from Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dwapar Yuga, Kali Yuga, then from Kali Yuga, Dwapar Yuga, Treta Yuga to Satya Yuga, you see very slowly the sky shift. And, you know, there have been, there are Indian astronomical texts that have mentioned two pole stars. You can see two pole stars, which are two different constellations. And then they disappear over a period of time because you can't see them anymore. It's because the Earth is, along with the sun, is moving around the star. And there are records of it. We can find the records of it in an Indian astronomical text called Surya Siddhanta. And entries have been made in Surya Siddhanta. It's a book on astronomy at 12,209 BCE. So 12,000 BCE. We can't even imagine that time. There have been entries made and there have been, like, this is what we see in the sky right now. And people were very much aware of the precession of the equinoxes. And so it also brings us to the point that the ancient cultures, especially, and there are records of ancient Indians, but there have been ancient civilizations that have been very intelligent, very wise. They've been aware of astronomy. They have been aware of the sky and how that sky connects to consciousness on this planet. And that's the metaphysics of it. We are very divorced from that concept. We look at the sky. A lot of us don't even know the sky. We don't even know simple things like when is the full moon and when is the new moon. We don't look at the sky. We probably will look at an app and look at a weather. We not even walk outside and feel the weather. But people lived as a part of the entire cosmos, like it's Earth as a part of the entire cosmos. They looked and studied the sky. And they figured out how certain energies in the sky affects human consciousness. That's the metaphysics of it. And that's what brought me into astrology too, like knowing how the astronomy connects to consciousness and evolution of life on Earth per se is what like really drew me into astrology in the first place. And all these concepts are tied together in astrology, in Vedic astrology.
So that it's like the whole rabbit hole of questions. One question leads to another and to another to you. Maybe find an answer. I don't know. So we're talking about the consciousness and how the sky affects people. So all right. So it's true then. Full moon makes people crazy then.
That's a layman's way of saying it. I think full moon is when. And, you know, the moon is a metaphor for the mind, or it represents our mind. And when you talk about the full moon, it's the brightest. So the mind is more receptive to higher philosophies and teachings and gods. So it's more bright, it's more willing, and it's more open and receptive. On a new moon, it is still receptive, but because the moon is dark, the mind takes longer time to connect to the truth. It takes a convoluted path instead of a straight path. So I would never call anything crazy.
It just makes people act a little bit more irrational than normal. Is that a safer bet? Can we say that?
I wouldn't subscribe to that. People are not irrational. I think any phase of the moon can make people irrational, if you put it that way, because it depends on how that phase of the moon is associated with your consciousness, your individual consciousness. If you're born, for example, close to a dark moon, that energy will feel natural and normal to you. So it won't make you feel irrational or crazy. If you're born...
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
Yeah, if you're born closer to a full moon or a brighter moon, then that energy will feel more natural to you. It won't make you crazy. But we know that the moon, if you look at the actual moon in the sky, it creates tides in the ocean, right? This is a fact everybody can see. People living in California who go to the beach even during COVID times without a mask can see that the moon creates tides in the ocean. It affects water, because it has a gravitational pull on the water on the planet. And where do you have the most water in your body? Right? Your body is made up of 72% water. So if you think that the moon can create tides in the ocean but not affect the water in your body, which is the biggest makeup of your body, I think then that's crazy talk.
You know what? I forgot about that. I never thought to put those two things together. The moon affects the water on the planet. Your body's made of 70% water. Why doesn't the moon affect you as well?
It does. But people think, right? It does. But people think
that. I just put that together. Wow. Okay. Wow. All right.
Yeah.
You you've answered like every question. Let's see. So coming out of, I think, from what I know, what you're doing, with the information that we have now, can people put this into practice in their everyday life so they can apply it or learn from it or study themselves, their karma? What are your thoughts on that?
Most definitely. I think all ancient cultures knew how to read the sky. They knew how to read the stars and the constellation, and they knew the movement. They knew the astronomy behind it and the physics behind it, right? So knowing that should be like a basic elementary knowledge and not like a graduate degree level knowledge, in my opinion. But just even being aware of the times and the time cycles people are in should make a little bit more fearless, right? I think the biggest, I don't believe in sin, but the biggest adharma is to instill fear in people so that they don't live their highest potential.
Okay.
Knowing the times and the time cycles and how that works and how that plays out and just having a general awareness should create a certain sense of fearlessness where people really go for it, right? And really live their best, highest potential. I genuinely believe that if people are given the freedom to just live their highest potential, there'll be a lot less evil on this planet because everybody's given the opportunity to live the best life that they can. And the thing that prevents them is the fear that is created either by other people or by systems. That fear itself is adharma. Adharma. That is not, it is not dharmic. Dharma is living your life fearlessly as if there is nothing to lose and just going for it. And if an individual really goes for it, if, for example, you as Just Ray really goes for it and lives your highest expression on this planet, not just you, but it also elevates your friend circles, your family, your community, and then they start living their higher lives and their higher philosophies, and they affect other people. So one person being able to do this is really important because it helps or creates a ripple effect where everybody on the planet can live a higher life. Nobody needs to go sleep hungry. Nobody needs to starve or be impoverished or, you know, put through traumatic situations like half of the humanity is. That's be non-existent. So knowing that we are moving, ascending towards lighter and lighter times should give people hope that, you know, that they can really live in a way that is authentic to them and authentic to the society.
All right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's just, I'm not that type of person that's like, I'm not easily blown away by people saying things or giving philosophies or how things work in life. I'm not that guy, but I am truly blown away. Like my mind is like, I don't think I'm gonna be able to sleep for a while. Real. I'm not just trying to say it to blow smoke or nothing. I don't care what anyone says. I think this is one of our key shows for this year, for this season. So
I'm
probably gonna
glad. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think this is a good place to end, and I'm so grateful to be here, and to all the listeners out there, Just Ray is a great art director. You should go and check out his Instagram page and his Twitter account and look at his art. And he is
Thank you.
I'm doing some PR here, so you can give me commission for it later. And,
yeah, you'll get it. You'll get it. Yeah. Tell me.
And he's designing this amazing T-shirt with sacred geometry.
Yep.
That you can purchase from the website. You can
It's going to be on Linktree. It's on our Linktree, our merch store. There's a link there. I'm going to design it. I'm going to make it happen.
Yeah,
I'll let
so
you finish the rest.
And buy those T-shirts and help him in this fundraiser, because that fundraiser is for a good cause. It's for a cause to help people who are suffering from COVID, the pandemic that has affected so many lives, not just health-wise, but it has brought economies of the world crashing down. A lot of people have lost their jobs. There are a lot of people who don't have food to eat and don't have food to put on their kids' plates. People can't afford to send their kids to school because they've lost their income. So it's not just health and life, loss of life, but it is also loss of livelihood. And so if you buy these T-shirts from Just Ray, it will help towards a noble cause. And I'm so grateful for him for doing that and having me on the show.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for being on the show. If anybody, check us out, like, comment the show. We're looking for more people like Dr. Malini, Ms. Iyer, to come on and talk to us about things like this. This is a really good show. I don't really know how to end besides make the sacred geometry shirts and we raise funds. And oh, I know how we're going to end it. Two things for the listeners. Tune in next Wednesday for Miss Michelle Arbeau, the number one top numerologist in the country. And secondly, we're going to have you back to talk about biotech. I don't know if it's going to be this month or next month. We're going to have you back. You really really went into detail with the Vedic sciences and the yugas, and I learned a lot more than I thought I was going to learn tonight. So thank you. I appreciate you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here, and I'm glad this worked out. And if people want to reach me, they can look me up on Instagram. My handle is Your Friend Malini. It's URFRIENDMALINI, Your Friend Malini. Or you can, I think my information is also on the page where
yeah.
This podcast will be posted. You can also email me at malini@cosmicartandscience.com. That's how you can get to me. Thank you so
much.
All
right, guys. Yeah, thank you. And that's it for us. And we'll see you guys next week. Be good to each other.
Thank
you. We're out.